3-2 to Garcia. Is chopped towards short. Going to be a tough play. Castro's throw. Offline. Blanco holds at third. Michael goes to second. It is a one-run game with the tying run at third and the go-ahead run at second.
The Royals with a valiant comeback in the ninth inning yesterday against the Twins in Minnesota, but unable to come away with the victory. 6-5 was the final in favor of the Twinkies. Welcome to Sports Ticket, brought to you by Kiefer Brothers Automotive in Beloit. Your home for fast, friendly auto repair. Royals won 8 in a row, but now have lost 2 in a row. Royals are 34-21 as they fall 6-5 yesterday as they rally in the ninth and Bobby Witt Jr. ground out to end the game. Royals had runners at second, third, chance to perhaps take the lead. Matt Cotrero and his team's resolve, fighting back despite being down 5 in the ninth.
It doesn't surprise me at all. We talk a lot about the character of these guys, how hard they work, how much they stay in it, and it doesn't surprise me. We put good at-bats together. You know, the early part of the game, Joe Ryan just, you know, pitched really well against us, and that happens. He's really good. So our guys didn't give up. We gave ourselves a chance.
6:40 tonight, Cole Reagan's on the hill for the Royals, 4-3, outstanding his last time out with 12 strikeouts, ERA at 3.34. Against the Twins, are at 29-24, and American League Central looks to be a little bit more difficult than some people may have imagined. So the bad news is the Royals lost. The good news is they won 8 in a row, now they've lost 2 in a row, so good news, bad news. More good news, though, Angel Hernandez is quitting baseball as an umpire, thank God. He's been an embarrassment to the profession for a few years now, at least.
Yeah.
And he's the most notorious or infamous umpire in Major League Baseball history. He is retired or forced into retirement, is the way I see it, which should have happened years ago. Angel Hernandez last worked on May 9th, will not return to the field. Him and Major League Baseball working out a settlement to convince him to retire. Hernandez, 62 years of age, has drawn the ire of players, coaches, and fans alike for decades since he was hired full-time in 1993. Faced with near-constant criticism of his calls, in 2017 he filed a racial discrimination lawsuit against Major League Baseball, alleging that he was rejected for a promotion to crew chief and not chosen to work the World Series because he was Cuban. He umpired in both the 2002 and 2005 World Series. So, Angel Hernandez, no longer will you be watching, hopefully, an umpire call 3 straight ball strikes to punch out a guy, as he did recently this year. He was an embarrassment to the profession. I think umpires privately, if you talk to them having a beer at the bar and they said off the record and they knew they were safe to say whatever they wanted to say, would say thank God and it's about a decade overdue.
Hallelujah. Yeah, you were not promoted because of performance there, buddy.
No, not at all. State track and field from over the weekend. Some champions that we have in our midst.
Yeah, we had 4 events that won championships there at state track and field, and Tatum Seifert set a new meet record in the 3A girls shot put at 45'11¼. So she put her name in the record books there and won the state championship in the 3A girls shot. And then Madison Howland, as expected, had a really good weekend for Smith Center, winning both the 3,200 and 1,600 meter runs in 2A girls action, the state title there. And then the Osborne girls 4x800 meter relay team taking the gold at state. Ryan Berticelli, Kate Kendig, Addison Poor. And now I'm forgetting the other one that was on the team. I didn't have it written down in my list there. But the 4x8 for Osborne, we expected them to have. And Levy Reiner was the other one on the 4x8 team, by the way, for Osborne. That we expected them to have a good weekend, and they did. It's just the second time that those four have raced together this year, and Coach Tiernan expected them to do well. So they won a state championship as well in the 1A girls 4x8. You can find the complete results for all of our area athletes at ncksports.com. There's links there to the results that I had put together for all of the Katy Country 94 area track and field athletes that qualified for state, how they did, where they placed. It's all posted, again, ncksports.com.
State champions crowned in baseball and softball as well. Check that out at acacia.org. And congratulations to all those that were champions and did well and made it to state competition at all the spring sports. Coming up in 30 seconds, Kansas State with some good news.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or SunflowerStateRadio.com.
Extended warranties on vehicles have become a very popular thing. You may have bought one, but what do you do to take advantage of the benefits when you need them? Kiefer Brothers Automotive in Beloit works with most all warranty contracts, and we can be your advocate when you need repairs. Just bring us your car, your concerns, and a copy of the warranty contract, and we take care of the rest. rest. Let our fast, friendly service help you get the most out of your extended warranty contract. Find Kiever Brothers Automotive just south of the courthouse in Beloit or on the web at kieverbrothers.com.
The Field of 64 in NCAA Division I baseball tournament was revealed yesterday, and despite going just 15-15 in the Big 12 and 1-2 at the Big 12 tournament, K-State received an invite. Wildcats are 32-24 on the season. They'll be the number 3 seed at the Fayetteville, Arkansas Regional. They'll take on the 2 seed Louisiana Tech coming up this Friday night at 7 o'clock. It's a double elimination regional, and double elimination is important when we note that because Nebraska Cornhusker baseball, amazing stuff what they did at the Big Ten tournament. They lost their first game, had to fight their way all the way through the loser side, back into the winner side, and then won the Big Ten tournament. 39-20 are the Huskers. They're the 2 seed in the NCAA Regional Stillwater. They'll play a 3rd seed Florida, who has a whopping 28 wins and 27 losses, but got into the tournament despite being under 500 in the conference. Nebraska and Florida will play at 2 o'clock on ESPN+. Oklahoma State is the tournament's number 11 overall seed. They're the 1 seed in that region. Arkansas, the number 1 region seed in the region that K-State's playing in at Fayetteville, Arkansas. Couple things here. Baseball doesn't get nearly as much coverage as the NCAA tournament, and then we're talking about the college football playoff, and I say that loosely. It will truly be a playoff here in the future. But we talk about teams that got the shaft, teams that were on the bubble, didn't get in. We're arguing about who's the 69th best team, 68th best team in the basketball tournament, so forth and so on. We'll do the same thing with the college football playoff. We'll argue who should be the 12th team. And then if we grow the playoff to 16 teams, we'll argue who the 16th best team is. And this team got, you know, the short end of the stick, so forth and so on. But college athletics is geared towards the big boys. And the little guys, they're just, you kind of feel like that's a microcosm of society, don't you? Like, you're the middle class maybe is shrinking. There's the lower class, the middle class, and then the rich class, as I would like to call it. And you do feel like that's kind of a microcosm. Sports is a microcosm of society sometimes, that you're kind of in this area where you've got more obstacles to overcome than some people that are way better off. So when I look at this, and this should be a big thing, but it's not, because it's baseball, doesn't drive the ratings as basketball and football does. But if this happened in football, we'd be screaming. If this happened in basketball, we'd be really screaming as well. But there's 64 teams, not 68 like the NCAA men's basketball tournament. There's 64 teams that get to the Division I baseball tournament. The SEC has 11 in the tournament. Four of the 11 teams that made the NCAA Division I baseball tournament yesterday from the SEC, their conference record, all four of them, four of the 11, their conference record, you want to guess what it is?
I'll say below 500. I don't know how many games they play.
How many games under 500 do you think they are?
I'll bet six.
Four. 13 and 17.
Yeah.
So you have four SEC teams out of 11 that made it. So 11 of the 64, which is, I'll have to do the math on it. I grab my phone here. But let me do this real quick, just to give you an idea how one-sided things are. 17% of the NCAA tournament is the SEC. 17%. And then four of those teams that got in, which is 7% of the field, doesn't even have a 500 record. They're four games under, 13 and 17. And the one that's just a joke is Florida. Florida's 28-27. They barely have a winning record overall.
Uh-huh.
And they're in this tournament. You could argue K-State, 15-15 in their conference, but at least they're 500.
Yeah.
At least they're 500. And here's the thing. You're like, well, what's the big deal about this? College of Charleston. Their head coach really had a good little tirade on social media last night supporting his team, and I don't blame him one single bit. He used to be a baseball coach at South Carolina, who is part of the SEC. Mm-hmm. And he had a team one year that went 13-17 in the SEC, and they didn't come close to making the tournament. His team this year is 41-14 and did not get invited to the tournament, but Florida at 28-27... 13-17 in their conference gets in. Four teams, 13-17 in their conference. Not one, four. Four teams in the SEC that were four games under 500. Not one, not two, not three, but four. One that's barely over 500 for the whole year, 28 and 27, is in. College of Charleston, 41 and 14, nope.
Yeah.
That's a joke. That's pathetic. And I've said this before, and I'll say it again, in the NCAA, whatever governing body you want to have, like, they say, the committees always say this, the regular season means something. As the College of Charleston's coach said, apparently it doesn't. Because if it did, we'd be in this tournament. And Kansas State felt like they got the shaft last year. They actually had a better overall record last year and didn't get in. This year, they had a worse record, but they beefed up their non-con schedule, so forth and so on. And they always talk about, well, you know, we do this and we want to get the best teams in and do this and do that. Why don't you just go ahead and call it a five-conference or four-conference invitation? Because the little guys don't have much of a chance when it comes down to being argued against the big boys. Well, they're 13-17 conference. Well, yeah, but they play in a really, really, really tough conference. And there should be something, in my opinion, that you have to at least go 500 in your conference to make a tournament. We talked about the NCAA, like, you know, the Big 12. Well, Big 12, you know, Jerome Tang was saying that, well, what was he saying? 8-10 or whatever it was this year. Well, should have been good enough. And I say baloney. I didn't agree with him on that, no. And I still don't agree today. I think you should have to win half your conference games. Is that asking too much? If you're that damn good, you want to be in a tournament of 68 teams to win a championship, shouldn't you be one of the top 68 teams? Well, we are, because we're in the Big 12 or the SEC or the Big 10 or the ACC. Yeah, you didn't even win as many games as you lost in your conference. And you know, here's the thing. You have as many home games as you have away games. So you should win most of your home games if you're good. Win a few on the road. You should be 9-9. If you can't be 9-9, like the baseball team, K-State, at least they got 15-15. They're in. Why, Florida shouldn't be in the baseball tournament. Neither should. I mean, these teams are 13-17. Should not be in my opinion. Now I know LSU's got a pretty good record overall. I think they're 40-21, so they're 27-4 against everybody outside the conference. And once again, you can make exceptions all you want. But I think there needs to be some kind of criteria that it has to be a combination of something. Like, if you are under 500 in your conference, you have to be so many games over 500 overall. Does that make sense? Like, for instance, Florida's 28-27 overall. They're 13-17 in conference. They're out. With my criteria, they're out. LSU's 13-17 in conference, okay? But they're 19 games over 500 overall. So my argument would be this. You need to be at least 10 games over 500 overall to get in with a losing conference record. You have to, because you have to compensate for all your losses. That's the way I'm looking at it. You could make it a very simple rule and policy, and it would be somewhat unfair to certain teams in really tough conferences. I do get it. That you have to be 500 or better. Well, in that case, LSU would have been left out, and LSU is 40-21. Here's something that's interesting to me. LSU played 36 of their 61 games at home. That's that, and they're still 13-17 in conference play, but they're 19 over. So of the teams that are 13-17, let's just go ahead and say you have to be 10 games over 500 to get in with a losing conference record. Or maybe you say 15 games over 500. I don't care what criteria you want to put. Vanderbilt would be in at 38-21. You know, that's still a pretty good record, 13-17 in conference. South Carolina, 36-23. Okay, they're 13 over, 13-17 in conference play. Okay, I'm cool with that. LSU, 40-21 overall, 13-17 conference play. They're 27-4 against everybody outside the conference. That's pretty tough to leave them out. I get that. Florida, I'm sorry, you have no excuse. Florida's 15-10 outside of the conference. That's not, to me, championship material.
Yeah.
And I'm sure they had some PUD non-conference games. I haven't studied it. You know, Nebraska's in. They won the Big Ten tournament. They're 39-20. They deserve to be in, and plus they won the conference tournament. But if the little guy's going to have any chance in these huge, big invitational tournaments, and that's what these are. These are invitational tournaments.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you get the automatic bid, it's an invitational tournament. It doesn't matter if you go 18-2 in your conference. You, we talk about in basketball, you lose your conference tournament, you're out. No team in basketball, in my opinion, unless you're so many games over 500 overall, should make it. You know, Kansas State, I'm sorry. I don't, what was K-State's final record this year in men's basketball?
Ooh, I don't even remember.
Was it 19-14? I think it was 19-15 once they lost in the NIT, right?
I think so. Well, I'm trying to suppress that memory, so
yeah.
I don't remember.
By the way, K-State's new website, I hate.
I don't like it either.
It was so easy to navigate, yeah. And now I can't even get to where I want to go. I can't even get. I've got something with baseball. I'm trying to get to the basketball, and I can't even get there. Yeah. I literally can't. I'm stuck. I got quick links to baseball. That's it. I can't even get to football right now. I mean, come on, Kansas State. You had a great website and you screwed it up. I'm still trying to get
there. I'm trying to pull it up and it's not even going.
There we go. Finally, I get there. So now I'll go to teams, men's basketball, schedule, and K-State was 19-15. 8-10 in conference. So here's my thing. If you're going to have a losing record in conference play, shouldn't you have to have a certain overall winning percentage, or you have to win so many games overall? Like, I'll give you an example. You have to win 20. You have to win half your games in conference. If you don't, you have to at least win 20 overall. Or you have to win 60% of your games, or you have to win a certain percentage of your non-con to compensate for your conference. K-State had no good non-con wins.
Mm-hmm.
So if you would have had some really good non-con wins, one, you would have been over 19 wins. You also might have got up to 600 winning percentage overall. But I think there needs to be some kind of criteria that you just can't get in because, well, I'm from the SEC or the Big 12 and leave College of Charleston or other small schools out. You should have to win half your games in your conference. Is that asking too much?
No.
Okay.
It's not.
11 teams in the SEC made it.
I say
there's 14 in the conference. Yeah. 11, hell, why don't we just let them all in? Missouri has a losing record. Why do we care? They're in the SEC. Florida barely had a winning record. Well, why the hell isn't Auburn in? Auburn's 27-26. Florida's 28-27. Yeah, but Auburn's 8-22 in the conference. Yeah, but the conference is really tough. That's what everybody tells me. Why isn't Alabama in? Alabama's not in? What the hell's going on with this country? Alabama's not in. We're talking baseball. Oh, we don't care about baseball in Alabama. Alabama was 33-22 overall, 13-17 in conference play. They had more win. Florida was 28-27. Alabama was 33-22. They both went 13-17 in conference play. Florida's in, Alabama's out. Now, I'm sure they're going to say that Florida's non-con was tougher and Alabama had some weak non-con cupcakes, and that could be true. I don't know. But you see the dangerous precedent you set here? When you let a team in, by the way, Florida made it. And they lost the first round of the SEC tournament. It's not like they played their way in.
Yeah,
like, it'd be one thing if Florida was 13-17 in conference and they were 24-26 going to the SEC tournament and they won 4 out of 5 games or 4 out of 6 and they made it to the championship game. That would be something. They lost as an 8 seed to a 9 seed in, or a 9 to an 8, whatever. They lost in the first round of the SEC tournament. Well, Z-Wade, that proves to you clearly the SEC is that good. Maybe Florida's not that good. Yeah, 28-27, and you're in the NCAA tournament, and that's their overall record. Their conference record is 13-17. That is a joke. Either we need to squeeze the field to less teams if that team is worthy of getting in. We got to squeeze the field in baseball down to 32, 48. We're struggling to find teams. We're put teams in. They're 4 under .500 and 1 over .500 overall, and we leave teams like Carlos Charleston out. And a guy that coached in the SEC is looking at this going, I know the goalposts continue to move. Why? If you did blind resumes, which I don't believe these committees do it. They should. They should have blind resumes. You know what other thing would be great? I think for full transparency, you should, hell, we have cameras in courtrooms today nowadays, right? Why don't we broadcast everything to make money, right? Let's just be a complete shill, NCAA. Let's go ahead and put a camera and you can edit a little bit, but let's go ahead and see. Let's actually see if you do blind resumes. Let's actually know how the process works. You say that if there's some team that has a conflict or with a team that they're considering, that they're out of the room. Do we know that for sure? We don't. Because this is a joke. And if this was the NCAA men's basketball tournament, if this was the college football playoff, and a team got in with this type of resume, we would be screaming bloody murder across the hills.
Yeah.
But since it's baseball, nobody really cares.
Yeah, I agree with you for the most part on the whole, you should be 500 in your conference. I will probably, just based on how things like this are decided, maybe push back a little bit with the SEC, because there's no argument in anybody's universe that the SEC is not the best baseball conference in America in Division I baseball. But I won't push back on Florida. Florida does not deserve to be in this tournament. If they're 13-17 in the conference and they're only one game above 500, they don't deserve that shot. Because I was as you were talking, I was looking it up. I was like, what did they do in the conference tournament? Got beaten their first game.
First round.
They're not. They do not deserve to be in this tournament. The other three teams clearly have an argument to say that they deserve to be in this tournament because, again,
way better overall record.
Absolutely. And LSU, by the way, is the defending national champions, right, too, and they're probably not going to keep them out, right?
Right.
If they're 19 games
and they did win 40 games.
Exactly. They're 19 above 500. Right. They have 40 wins. They're definitely not keeping LSU out of this tournament.
And I don't have a beef with that.
It's real easy to keep Florida out of this tournament if there's a team that's, what do you say, College of Charleston's 41-14. If there's a team like that, it's pretty easy to put them in over Florida, I would think.
I would.
Well, but apparently it's not. But I will say that when you think about how some of these things are put together based on your strength of schedule, based on what you're doing, the 13-17 SEC record is not bad because you're playing in the best conference without question.
But
they've
won
9 of the last 14 titles.
How is a little guy supposed to have any chance in this environment when the big boys, one, won't play you, okay? Two, you've got to go to their house. All right, the deck is stacked against you. How are they supposed to play? This is not even close to an even level playing field. It's not
close. Not at all.
So how are they supposed to have any chance when you go 41-14 and a team from the SEC, when they already got 10 in, like Florida had to be the last one in. Are we going to have a big problem? Are people going to scream bloody murder at Florida shouldn't be in? By the way, 11 out of the 14 teams of the SEC made the NCAA Division I tournament. That's 79% of the league. Oh my, what happens if we put College of Charleston in, let the little guy have a shot, and keep Florida out because they lost the first round of the SEC tournament, didn't play their way in, 28-27 overall record, okay, barely above 500. You know what? You still have 10 of the 14 teams in. That's still 71% of the league. Is anybody going to cry? I mean, Florida's going to complain, but really they shouldn't when they're 28-27.
You can't go one above.
So to me, the less path of resistance would have just simply been reward the little guy in this situation.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the committee didn't.
Yeah.
And if Carl Charleston can't win a battle in this situation, then when can the little guy have any chance?
Yeah, and we've been arguing that
in
all sports for a long time, right? I mean, this was obviously the point of contention of why does Boise State not get a chance to play for national championship in football way back when?
Yes.
And just the regular BCS,
Central Florida.
Yeah, and now you got the playoff. Why does Central Florida not have a chance to play in this thing, right? And so there's you're expanding it, and it's still not helping the little guy.
No.
And so
it just puts more of the big guys in.
These are things that we've argued for a long, long time in all sports and college athletics. And so, but there, you see contention points on each side of it. I don't see a contention point of how Florida's in this tournament over College of Charleston based on what we see right here, right now in front of us. The other, like I said, the other three, they're going to have very good arguments that they should be in this tournament because they are playing in, without question, the best conference in American baseball. This is better than football almost in baseball, the SEC. I mean, they've won 9 of the last 14 championships in Division I. Oregon State has 2 of the other whatever 5 that are available, and Coastal Carolina made that big run that one year, and the little guy actually pulled through that one year, and that's why that was so awesome, right? When Coastal Carolina won a championship and the little guy actually did it and got through everybody and said we're going to go ahead and do it, but if you don't get that chance like Coastal Carolina did, you don't have the opportunity to be that team. So it is crazy to me that a team that's 1 above 500 and 4 below in conference is good enough to get a bid, because that shouldn't be the case in any sport.
And then there's always this weak argument. I always think it's extremely weak. Well, if Florida goes in a baseball tournament and they like go all the way to the College World Series, let's say they put together a run. See? They deserve to be there. It's like, Well, maybe College of Charleston could have done the same thing. How would we know? Exactly. That's the point, is they weren't allowed the opportunity, even though they earned it. Florida, did they fully earn it? Don't know. Took advantage of the opportunity once they got invited. But I love when people say, well, they got it right because look at them and how big a run they made. Well, who's to say the other team couldn't have made that run? The thing is, it's called opportunity. And I don't think Florida should be in this tournament. But they are. And they were the 9 seed in their conference tournament. Didn't even win a game in their own conference tournament. So go Nebraska against Florida. That's for sure. A rematch of Tommy Frazier versus Florida when Nebraska annihilated the Gators in the national championship game. That was the eternity to go for Husker football fans. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Monday's selection for Nebraska's baseball program in their 18th NCAA tournament appearance, 15th last 24 seasons. In the second NCAA tournament appearance under head coach Will Bolt. So Nebraska's playing good baseball. K-State gets into the tournament, so new lease on life, and they have to be pretty excited. K-State will play Friday night at 7 o'clock against Louisiana Tech down in Arkansas. Double elimination, and Nebraska will play Florida Friday at 2 p.m. NBA playoffs. The Celtics complete a sweep last night over the Pacers because the Pacers just don't know how to close any games.
Brown on the drive, pulls back, lost the ball, got it back, kicks it out White. Corner three, bang! Derek White from downtown, Celtics by 3. Tatum, shot clock at 6. Tatum, step back, puts up another 3. Back of the rim, moves on. Holiday, the offensive rebound, now the Pacers have to foul. Brown has it, final seconds. That's it, it's over. The Celtics are heading back to the NBA Finals.
All right, a few things I want to touch upon here is the Celtics get the sweep over the Pacers. I picked the Pacers to win this series, and quite honestly, they should have won at least 2 of the 4 games. You could argue they could have been up 3-1 after last night. The Pacers just absolutely coughed up the ball at the horrible times. Game 1 was the epitome of what took place. Mm-hmm. I mean, it set the tone. They got blown out in Game 2. They should have won Game 3 and 4. The Celtics are living a charmed life. There's no doubt. The lucky leprechaun exists for the Celtics right now I don't want to say this to downgrade the Celtics. The Celtics had the best record in the NBA this year, 64-18. It wasn't relatively that close. They stayed pretty healthy this year. That's a key, of course. But the Celtics, the West was better than the East this year. Most people know that. But then the playoffs, Giannis didn't play in the playoffs, so the Bucks were bounced. Embiid wasn't even close to 100%, so the Sixers didn't make a run. The Celtics' first-round series against the Heat, Jimmy Butler got hurt, I believe, in Game 1. So he was out the rest of the series. They won that series. Take on the Cavs. Donovan Mitchell didn't play the final 2 games after the Cavs had tied the series at 1-1. And the Celtics won Game 3, and Mitchell had a big game then, and then got hurt. Celtics won that series in 5. Mitchell was out. Then they get the Pacers, and Halliburton gets hurt and doesn't play Games 3 and 4 back in Indiana. Now, Porzingis did get hurt for the Celtics. And I say all this not to degrade what the Celtics have done, because the Celtics, all they can do, all can Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, and their head coach Joe Mazzulla, all the Celtics can do is play who's in front of them. It's not their fault other teams get hurt. But I'm going to tell you one of the biggest things that continues to get overlooked a little bit. It's been touched upon a little bit. And I said this way back before the season began. When the Milwaukee Bucks traded for Damian Lillard, I said the Bucks got worse. Remember me saying that?
Mm-hmm.
I said, he can score. They're going to score points, but they just lost a key component, Drew Holiday. I said, Drew Holiday is all-around better player than Damian Lillard. He scored 17, 18 a game, not 28, but he plays outstanding defense. He's a glue guy. The Bucks have no chance of winning a title a few years ago without Drew Holiday. He was an amazing player. So he gets shipped to Portland as part of the deal, okay? And Lillard goes to Milwaukee. And didn't work out well for the Bucks this year. Granted, Giannis got hurt. I get it. But it's not like the Bucks were setting the world on fire when he was playing. They would have been the 3 seed, I believe. Could they have made a run? Yeah, possibly. Holiday went to Portland. Portland, obviously, is rebuilding. So I remember saying on this show, whoever gets Drew Holiday is getting a steal. Because I heard he was on the trading block. The Celtics got Drew Holiday. And right away, I said, that is like you just took Drew Holiday from the Bucks, because a lot of people thought before the season the Celtics and the Bucks are going to be the 2 best teams. Mm-hmm. Before that trade even happened, before Damian Lillard happened, because the Bucks were the 1 seed last year. Celtics, I believe, were the 2. The Bucks and the Celtics have been the 2 best teams in the East the last 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden you're going to move Drew Holiday from Milwaukee to Boston, and the Bucks get Damian Lillard, who's more of an offensive guy. And here we are. Drew Holiday made the play of the game in game three. I mean, Jaylen Brown got the conference finals MVP. Tatum was right there with him. Drew Holiday overlooked. All he did was average 18 points, 7 rebounds, 7 assists. And last night got a gigantic offensive rebound so that the Pacers couldn't get the ball to go tie the game after they got Tatum to miss a three-pointer. He had the steal that sealed the Pacers' fate in game three. And he had a three-point play late in that game. Mm-hmm. He's clutch free throw shooter. He's an outstanding defender. He does all the things that make your team win. I said it before the season, and I love how all these national experts who get paid a lot of money can't even see these things because they get all caught up or they are just absolute shills and robots that are told by ESPN to only talk about Damian Lillard or only talk about the New York Knicks or ignore Midwest teams. Whatever it is that they're fed, ESPN is a joke when it comes to their coverage of some of these sports anymore. The only thing that's worth a damn on ESPN, in my opinion, is Scott Van Pelt. That's really about it. And, you know, there's some things. You know, College Game Day is not bad. Football sometimes, although that's getting going south, too. But these, I sit here and I'm like, I said this before the season began. I don't follow the NBA every day like some of these people. There's people way smarter than me that know, like, I guarantee you J.J. Redick breaks it down. He knows Drew Holiday is an extremely big part of the Boston Celtics puzzle. Without Drew Holiday, the Celtics aren't in the NBA Finals. If the Bucks would have just been patient instead of firing their coach a year or two after they had just won a title, and they were a one seed last year and got bounced in the first round, but fired their coach, why? Because they lost to the Heat in the first round. Yeah, the Heat, who were hurt all year long, end up being an 8 seed. The Bucks, Giannis, missed half the series. And we're going to fire the coach. Oh, so then you hire a guy. You fire him midway through the season when you're 15 games over 500. You trade for a guy that scores a lot of points but really hasn't won anything in his career, Damian Lillard. And you trade away a guy that isn't as sexy and doesn't hit the, he doesn't have the Dame watch to point to his wrist when he makes a big shot. But all Drew Holiday does is win. He's a winner. He's won a hell of a lot more than Damian Lillard's ever won. It's not even close. Mm-hmm. He's been an all-star, too. He's not, I mean, it's not like he can't score. He can. And he averaged 18-7-7 in the series against the Pacers. And the Bucks got worse by panicking. And the Celtics got better mainly because the Bucks panicked. I mean, that's, I mean, and then they hired Doc Rivers, who always loses in the playoffs. I mean, what the Bucks are doing is just flat-out comical. And Giannis got hurt again. Well, why aren't they firing Doc Rivers? I mean, you fired one guy halfway through the season his first year. You fired a guy 2 years removed from winning a title who's now going to coach the Phoenix Suns more than likely. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's official yet. And I'm sitting here,
I think it is, but I don't know.
I think it is. And I'm sitting here and I'm going, why? The Cleveland Cavaliers just fired their head coach after they had their best season in quite some time and made it to the second round of the playoffs, and their best player got hurt when they were down 2-1 against the Celtics, and they just fired him. What are you doing? Like, what are you doing? I mean, you deserve to suck. You deserve to lose. I mean, I like the Cavs. I like Dean Wade. I like Donovan Mitchell. I'd love to see the Cavs do something without LeBron. That'd be pretty impressive. But there is no patience anymore.
No.
And those that aren't patient are getting punished for it. And they deserve to. The Lakers, punished because they weren't patient. The Bucks, punished. They weren't patient. The Suns got punished. They weren't patient. You know who was more patient? The Nuggets, rewarded. Championship last year. The T-Wolves have been pretty patient to develop things to where they are. The Celtics have been pretty patient. They made some pieces, but did they go out and get a third superstar this offseason? No. They picked up Drew Holiday, didn't have to give up a lot for him to get him from Portland. And, oh, yeah, they got Porzingis, who's a perfect fit for what they want to do. Yeah. And I don't think the Celtics win the NBA title without Porzingis. I do agree with Barkley. I think the Mavs match up with the Celtics. But Porzingis, I mean, the Celtics get too dominant or too dependent on the three-point shot. The Celtics go one-on-one a little bit too much. Porzingis really stretches the floor. And so the Celtics, what were their two big moves during the offseason? They went and got Porzingis, a former All-Star, who's had injury problems, but when healthy, he's very good. Mm-hmm. And they got Drew Holiday, and the Celtics got better because the Bucks panicked. And so, really, it's kind of like the Warriors winning the West when Durant leaves OKC. Who was left to win it? Well, who's left to win it in the East? Well, it ain't the Bucks. It ain't the Pacers. The Knicks maybe could have given the Celtics some problems, but they got hurt. There's nobody. Embiid, Celtics weren't going to lose to the Sixers anyway. Embiid was 100%. So the Celtics have had a clean path to the finals. But they are really good. They won 64 games this year. But I look at them and I'm like, they're not dominant. Sometimes they just make these dumb plays and they are Jekyll and Hyde. They can be down 20 in a game and then win by 10. They've blown 30 point leads this year. Did you know that?
Oh yeah.
They blew a 30 point lead and lost a game this year. They're not good at home, like the Celtics teams back in the day with Larry Bird and all those. They're not dominant at home, even though they were 64-18. Are they the best team talent wise remaining? Yeah, in the whole playoffs. Yeah, I think they are. But they've had a nice setup to get to the NBA Finals. And now they will more than likely play the Dallas Mavericks. Mavericks are up 3-0 on the T-Wolves after they went on Sunday 116-107. They look for the sweep tonight at 7:30 on TNT. The NBA Finals won't start till next Thursday, June the 6th, by the way. Jaylen Brown at 29 points. Tatum, 26 points, 13 rebounds, 8 assists. Drew Holiday, 18 points, 7 rebounds. Celtics win. So we're looking at the Mavs and the Celtics, which would be Porzingis against his former team, the Mavericks. It would be Kyrie Irving against his former team, the Boston Celtics. I'm sitting here thinking this would be a really good series. But one thing I want to point out about the two series, the T-Wolves and the Mavericks and the Celtics and the Pacers series, and it's almost, they're almost pure replicas of each other. The Pacers and the T-Wolves, their star players, their best players are young players that haven't been in these situations before.
Mm-hmm.
And the Celtics have been there, done that with Brown and Holiday and Tatum. And the Mavericks have been there, done that. I mean, Luka's been in the conference finals before. Kyrie's won NBA title, been in the finals a few times. And to me, it's clear. All seven of the games so far played in the conference finals, the three in the West between the Mavs and the T-Wolves, all four between the Pacers and Celtics, six of those seven games could have gone anybody's way. The T-Wolves-Mavs is just like deja vu all over again. It's like watching Scott Frost coach the Nebraska Cornhuskers, and you know exactly what's going to happen late in the game, even though the Huskers are up. Mm. You know they're going to lose by within a single score. You knew it, right? Well, the same movie over and over, different movie, same ending, whatever you want to call it. Different book, same ending, same chapter, whatever you want to do analogy-wise. The Husker fans knew, even though they were somehow clinging to hope, that something would be different. The Mavericks have the two best closers in basketball right now. The Celtics have probably the best closers in the East as well. And to me, it is absolutely glaring that the reason the Celtics swept the Pacers and the reason the Mavericks are probably going to sweep the T-Wolves is experience and poise in the final minutes. The Pacers didn't score a point the final 3.5 minutes. Mm-hmm. The T-Wolves the other night were in control. Next thing, Kyrie takes over. Luka's amazing. And Anthony Edwards isn't able to do anything in the fourth quarter after he had a big third quarter. You could sit here and say, Karl-Anthony Towns is stunk. And yeah, if he would play like he's capable of, that'd be a different series, no doubt about it. But here's the thing. When you get in these big-time series in all sports, college, pro, your stars have to play well. And if your stars don't play well, you are cooked. And guess what? Karl-Anthony Towns has played horribly offensively. Rudy Gobert has not been good defensively. It's not a good matchup for the T-Wolves. Mm-hmm. Barkley's been saying this over and over. T-Wolves, Mavericks, it's not a good matchup with the T-Wolves. Even though the T-Wolves have lost three games by a combined, 13, 14, 15 mm-hmm. points? The T-Wolves got to sit here and go, well, why can't we win these games? Because just like the Pacers, you turn the ball over, you feel the pressure, you can't handle it. And maybe just that you need this experience so that next year you can get over the hump. Some years we see that with some of these teams, even in the pros. You got to get there, experience it, then you'll get past it. And these two series are absolute dual images of one another. The young team with the young stars can't come through in the final seconds. The other team takes them away. The team that's winning, I've got guys making winning plays like Drew Holiday.
Yeah. Let me go back to the Celtics-Pacers real quick. I'm glad you redirected from the what you were talking about with the injuries because and went into the Jrue Holiday conversation because there's reasons why the Celtics were so good this year.
Yes.
And why they won a lot of games. And I'm so tired of these places like Clutch Points and Bleacher Report and all these entities that act like they're media and they're not. And they put these graphics out there and they put these tweets out there. I'm scrolling through this morning. I got up real early this morning to do sports, so I was scrolling real quick before I went and took another nap. And I'm scrolling through, and it's like, is this the easiest run to the conference finals that anybody's ever had? And so they're listing all these guys that were hurt. Yeah, well, Kristaps Porzingis didn't play in the last two rounds, and he averaged 20 points and 7 rebounds when he was healthy.
Yeah.
Y'all, people just forget that the other team has issues at times, too, but also forget that the other team is the number one damn seed, and they're that good for a reason. It doesn't matter
games.
Who they're playing. They were the best team in the NBA by far this year, record-wise.
Yes.
It was not close.
Yes.
But they did the same dang thing last year with the Nuggets.
Yes,
they had the easiest run to a championship because they got to play number 8. They got to play 4. Then they got to play 7.
Well,
wait a minute, they had to play the Lakers.
The Lakers are really awesome. LeBron, who's the GOAT.
And then they got to play the 8 seed in the NBA Finals. Well, we said at the beginning of the playoffs last year, the Miami Heat are not an 8 seed. They had injuries, so they ended up being the 8 seed.
Yeah.
And so you're sitting up like, this is 2 years in a row now where people are acting like that just because the run that they had and the teams that they played were why they won a championship. The Denver Nuggets were clearly the best team in the NBA last year. That's why they won the championship. The Boston Celtics were clearly the best team in the NBA this year. That's why they're in the NBA Finals. I don't care who they played, when they played, who played for the teams that they played against. It does not matter. You, like you said, you play who is in front of you.
It's not the Celtics'
fault. The Celtics are 12-2 against the teams that are in front of them right now. They're not like 12-6.
No.
They're 12-2. They've swept the last team that won the first round in 5. They won the second round in 6 against a Cleveland team that probably technically was the best team
that they actually played.
Cleveland was 5, yeah. So the first two were 5, yeah. So they're 12-2. And it's like Cleveland was probably the best team that they played until Mitchell got hurt,
right?
So, yeah, I understand injuries happen in all leagues. But you play and beat who's in front of you. And I'm just so tired of all this. Like, you're downgrading the best teams in the league for the runs that they made. It's like, do this with, like, the 7 seed that gets to play the 1 seed that had their best player injured.
Yeah.
I get that. If you're playing, if you're a 6 or 7 and you're rolling through the playoffs and you won a championship because all the other teams had injuries, I get that part of it.
Yeah.
You're going to be like, well, they got lucky because they didn't have to play the best players on the best teams.
Right.
These teams are not – the Celtics and Nuggets are playing the not best players on the not best teams. Like it's like you didn't lose Jason Tatum, right? Jaylen Brown. They're still playing right now. And so it's like you take – Nikola Jokic was healthy the whole playoffs last year, you know? Jamal Murray was the linchpin and was healthy all the playoffs last year. Look at who's playing for the team that's winning and look how good they are going into it.
Yeah.
And I'm just so tired of people just like trying to downgrade what teams are doing when they were clearly the best all year. It's like, I don't watch every game in the NBA, but I pay attention to what's going on.
Yeah.
And it's pretty clear that the last two teams, the last 2 years that are being accused of having the easiest run to a championship were the best teams in the league that year. It's like the Chiefs, do they get the easiest run to the championship? Well, I don't know, but they're usually the best team in the league, and that's why they're winning.
Yeah.
And so I just don't get it. And I get tired of seeing it because then people run with that, and people that aren't informed start talking louder on social media.
People that are lazy and uninformed, that don't do any research, just go ahead, and they're like lemmings, and if you tell them to jump off a cliff, they will.
And so that's what makes it not fun, just like what you're talking about with ESPN, bouncing and rolling and just jumping on Dame Lillard in Milwaukee, or saying how good the Suns were going to be this year because they got Bradley.
Right away they
not
had people saying that the Suns were the favorite to win. The Suns were the favorite to win the West.
Then there's stuff out there saying maybe the Suns will draft Bronny and LeBron will go to the Suns. And it's like, would you do that? You already saw how bad it is only having one ball with 3 of these guys. Put LeBron on the Suns? What are we doing?
Unless they change the rules and they allow 2 basketballs, I don't think that's going to change
it. It's just like, that's the problem. And that's why it goes like that with ESPN is because people just run with it. They say the same things that are not informed.
And they'll talk about all that stuff that is inaccurate and they'll jump to conclusions and yet will overlook a Florida team making the NCAA Division yeah. One baseball tournament, 28-27. Carl DeCharleston not in. Because ESPN don't give a rat's no. you-know-what about the little guy. No. Now, it is interesting that Pac-12 came to a conclusion. The conference is now done, kaput. They played their final sporting event. It was the Pac-12 baseball conference championship. Arizona won it in exciting walk-off style. And it is interesting that, you know, when I think Pac-12 basketball, in coverage of Pac-12 basketball, I think of Bill Walton. Mm-hmm. That's the first name that pops in my head. And so people have pointed this out. Bill Walton, NBA great, college great, and an interesting broadcast to say the least. He died after a prolonged battle with cancer at 71. When I saw this yesterday, I was over at the Wellness Center working out yesterday. Got to get the guns developed. And actually just keep the fat from adding.
Yeah.
So that's what I try to do. And then I go get a shake or a Blizzard right afterwards because, you know, it makes me feel better. So I'm weird like that. So I'm watching and all of a sudden breaking news pops up. It says Bill Walton dies of cancer at 71. I'm like, I didn't even know he had cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Had no idea. And he was 71. And this is something I thought about. And this is no disrespect to Dick Vitale. I don't want it to come across the wrong way here. Okay? But I think it is. I think there is a difference between the personalities. And everybody's got different personalities, okay? And Dick Vitale has done a lot of amazing things for people. And he's the Jimmy V Foundation. Dick Vitale's helped raise a lot of money for people battling cancer and so forth and so on. So, listen, I'm not trying to say that Dickie V is a selfish person. I'm not. I do know that Dickie V was all about, you know, promoting his books and publicizing a lot of this stuff and self-promoting himself a lot. At the same time, there's a good chunk of money from the sales of his book and other things that he sold that did go for good causes. But here's the thing that jumped out to me yesterday. When I thought about Bill Walton and not knowing that he was sick at all, because I watched him do a game this, I think it was in February, I watched him do a game on TV and he was fine. He looked fine. I had no idea he was sick or battling cancer. I had no clue. You know, you sit here and you start to wonder, the people that you run into every single day, are they battling something? You have no idea.
Absolutely.
Of course they are. Whether it's mental health, distress, depression, horrible thing happened in their life, and they don't want people to know about it. Who knows? But when I thought about it for just a quick second, I'm like, I don't know why this popped in my head. But I'm not surprised that we didn't know he had cancer because Bill Walton, even though he was kind of the life of the party and he was so charismatic and, yes, odd and unique and different, and so that did bring attention to him. But Bill Walton never really, he never bragged about himself.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he was talking about a lot of stuff, I mean, and throw things out there, and him and Dave Pasch were really good working together. And so I thought about that. I'm like, when Dickie V has cancer or remission, we immediately know about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then he has all kinds of pictures on social media, beating cancer, fighting cancer. And listen, I wish Dickie V and his family the best and continue to beat cancer because I don't want anybody to lose the battle to cancer, no doubt. But it is interesting the different ways people approach their lives and how personal they can be, how open they can be, how maybe discreet they can be. And you know, everybody's just different. I mean, I'm different than some, you know, other people, but people are different than me. But I do, like, some people have to put everything on social media, everything in their life. It's like they need therapy. They're screaming they need therapy. Instead, their therapy is Facebook. So they put everything their kid does out there. But here's the funny thing. Like state track and field, state baseball, state golf, basketball, football, volleyball. It doesn't matter what sport. But especially if it's individual sport. One thing I've noticed is that I know when the kids have had a bad performance. You know how I know this? Because mommy and daddy post everything imaginable when they do great. And if they have an upcoming sporting event or what individual event or team event and whatever, and I hear nothing about it, and I know it already took place, but I didn't hear the result yet, I know it didn't go well.
Mm-hmm.
Because if it went well, they would be the first to brag to the entire world that their kid was state champion or their kid won a state championship, their team won a state title, you know, so forth and so on. Their kid won a major award. But if the kid finishes, you know, sixth out of seven people, they don't say second to last. They say they got sixth in a medal.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's, and then there are other people and other parents, and I tend to be more like this, where I really hesitate to put anything about my family online. from every once in a while, I do. Okay, not very often. I think there was one thing that I posted this year that was pretty deep in regards to my kids, you know, final basketball, you know, season and everything like that, because they and I shared that with people, and people could say, well, I'm a hypocrite, I did that, but I wasn't bragging about my son, and I didn't give all his statistics. I didn't break down how many three-pointers made in his career. Mm-hmm. I didn't go through every individual thing that he did. All right. And I didn't, you know, cry a river that they got hosed because they didn't win a state title, like some people that are sour grapes when their kid doesn't qualify for whatever it is. You know what? Listen, life isn't always going to give you everything you want. And if something doesn't quite go your way athletically or academically or extracurricularly in your life, and it happens in high school or junior high, if that's the worst thing that happens to you in your life, you're going to be doing pretty damn well. And it is amazing how parents just absolutely overreact to things. Mm-hmm. And it's always interesting to me about how they're quick to post things when everything's hunky-dory. When then things, you know, all of a sudden, it's like, well, I thought that kid or that team was playing in the big game today. Why am I not hearing about it? Oh, they lost by 28. Dick Vitale posts a lot of stuff that he goes through, which I don't have a problem with, okay? But he's a different personality. He has always been the life of the party in a different way than Bill Walton. And what I mean is, one of the things that I didn't like about Dick Vitale when he broadcasted games is I felt like he made himself bigger than the game itself. Mm-hmm. I'm not a fan of that, okay? I'm not saying I don't enjoy it. There's times I really enjoy Dick Vitale and what he says. I watch TV. I don't turn it because Dick Vitale is doing color commentary, you know? But I also know that he was full of jargon and sayings, and some of it we still remember today, which makes him a legendary broadcaster. But it was he was at times bigger than the game. And these talking heads, certain people, try to make themselves bigger than what they really are. And part of that is the animal created by the network, especially ESPN and Fox. Bill Walton never did that. Like, I felt like when I watched Bill Walton, he was just being himself. Like, Dick Vitale always, I mean, I don't think Dick Vitale goes around going, he's a PTP, your baby! No, I don't think that's how he is in real life. But Bill Walton, when he came across him, I watched him on TV spreading dirt on his face and on his arms and talking crazy stuff and about grizzly bears. I'm like, the dude just is himself. Mm-hmm. He's legitimately just being genuine. And I thought that came through the television. Now, there was times he would be going games like, what the hell, Bill? Can you focus on the game? But it wasn't. He didn't make it about him. He didn't go like how smart he was. He never was like how great a player he was. Or, I mean, he just let himself be. And from what I hear and have read and stories that have been done on Bill Walton over the years is that that's how he was. He was who he was. He was comfortable in his own skin. He wasn't trying to impress a whole bunch of people like parents try to do on social media. He wasn't trying to draw attention to do a whole bunch of stuff to make a ton of money, whether it's for a charity organization or for himself. He just simply was himself. And that's something I appreciate about Charles Barkley as well. I think Charles Barkley is simply himself. You might not agree with him all the time. You may get tired of him talking and butting in when Shaq's trying to talk, which Shaq doesn't add much anyway. But sometimes Kenny Smith's trying to say something and Barkley talks over him. And I know I've done that before on this show too. When Dusty and I've talked, we talked over each other. Sometimes I talked over Dusty. My apologies for all the years I've done that. But I am who I am. I mean, I'm not sitting here worried about what Dusty thinks every second of doing the show. And he doesn't worry about what I'm thinking about him every second of the show. Dusty and I, when we talk on this show, we are being ourselves. All right? We're passionate. We try to be informative, educational, and we have energy. We try to bring energy. Now, Dusty at 7 a.m. on Waterside Wake Up, maybe not as much energy, but that's fine because Dusty's not used to that. And there's days I don't bring the energy either at 7 a.m. on Waterside Wake Up. But the point I'm trying to make is, when we talk here on the Sports Ticket, we are being genuine. And we're not different people. We leave the microphone here and we go talk sports. We're going to talk it the same way.
Absolutely.
Now, maybe not as loud, but we're going to talk sports and we'll listen to other people's things. And I will tell people when they're wrong. I mean, people might not like it when I do that. But if somebody tells me, well, the Celtics have had the easiest path in NBA history to the NBA finals. And I'll be like, actually, no. Or, well, Luka Doncic and Kyrie Irving, the best backcourt ever in the history of the game, as Stan Van Gundy keeps shoving down my throat. And I'm like, have you actually thought about that before you said that? Like, have you gone back and looked at the history of the game? Because I don't know, Steph Curry and Klay Thompson were pretty decent recently. You know, Michael Jordan and anybody with Michael Jordan's pretty good, right? I don't know, Kyrie Irving, LeBron, if you consider LeBron a guard, Kyrie and LeBron are pretty damn good. Mm-hmm. I mean, I could go on and on. You know, there's probably other people. You know, I mean, did Oscar Robertson and Jerry West play together? I don't know. The point I'm trying to make on that is you're just grabbing stuff that people shove down your throat because you saw it on social media. That's all they say. That's their narrative. And I will try to correct you and say, well, there are some other people you should consider.
Mm-hmm.
Caitlin Clark, I had this conversation recently with a friend of mine. Caitlin Clark's the greatest women's player that ever played. I said, she's one of, but I don't know if she's the greatest. Did you ever hear of Jackie Stiles or Lynette Woodard or some other players back in the day? Cheryl Swoops? I will have those debates with people, whether it's on the show between me and Dusty. I'll do it with regular people out there and talk about, they say something. I'm not just going to let it slide. Now, somebody might not like because how dare I correct them because I know what I'm talking about and they just kind of throw it out there thinking I'm not going to say anything. But that's the way I am. That's just who I am. I'm not going to change. I'm not trying to make you look stupid when I say that. I'm just simply trying to prevent you from spreading misinformation is why I do it. So Bill Walton, to me, is genuine. And a lot of young people out there have no idea how great Bill Walton was. By the way, this is Sports Ticket brought to you by Kiefer Brothers Automotive and Bullet, your home for fast, friendly auto repair. Bill Walton passed away yesterday at the age of 71. Prolonged battle of cancer. Didn't make it public. Dick Vitale it is. I'm not saying that's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying it's two distinct different personalities who are they were both great at broadcasting, but did it in different ways. But I believe that if I ran into Bill Walton, he would be more genuine to me than Dick Vitale. Now, I don't know that. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that Dick Vitale's a bad person because of it. I just think it's a shtick. I don't think Bill Walton's stuff was a shtick. He was what he was.
Yeah.
But here's
the outlandish things that he said couldn't have been a shtick.
No.
I mean, the stuff he made up, or not made up, but said.
Some of it was made up.
Yeah, but I mean, that stuff was, I mean, you can't go in there and be like, this is my bit.
Yes.
No, that's who you are.
No. So, but what a lot of young people don't know, they just know him as a broadcaster. In college, he was one of the greatest players to ever play the game.
Mm-hmm.
In three seasons at UCLA, he was the National College Player of the Year all three times. The only other player to ever do that was Ralph Sampson. He led UCLA to two national championships, was awarded Final Four Most Outstanding Player twice. In 1973, in a national championship game, he scored 44 points and missed one shot, 21 out of 22 from the floor. UCLA went 86-4 over Walton's three seasons. Yes, there was a lot of talent on the team. I get it. He played a part in what is still a Division I record 88-game winning streak in college basketball set by UCLA. The run ended in Walton's senior campaign with a loss to Notre Dame, a game Walton was playing in a back brace due to a broken spine he had suffered earlier in the season. Who the hell in the NBA is going to play with a broken spine now?
Nobody.
Nobody in college either. The Bruins went on to make the national championship game again, lost to David Thompson, North Carolina State, in double overtime, or he would have had three titles in 3 years. That's his college resume. Walton finished his career with two NBA championships, NBA MVP, NBA Finals MVP, Sixth Man of the Year Award, two All-Star appearances, two All-NBA team nods, two All-Defensive First Team honors. His number 32 jersey, retired by the Trailblazers in 1989, inducted in the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame in 1993. He's a member of the College and NBA Hall of Fames. Selected the NBA's 50th anniversary team in 1996, 75th anniversary team in 2021, which means he is considered one of the greatest players to have ever lived on this planet. And the thing is, he got hurt a lot. Imagine if he wasn't hurt so much. He had chronic foot injuries and issues with his back. He went to the Celtics as a sixth man, and Larry Bird fit in perfectly. I remember that. I was like 10 when that happened. And he played his minutes. he's told the story I saw here today that he was not going to pass a physical. And he was traded to the Celtics. Red Auerbach came in to the doctor's office or whatever. And the doctor's like, Red, we can't pass this man. There's look at his foot. I mean, there's no way. And Red looked at, and this is what Bill Walton said, Red Auerbach with a cigar, of course, looked at Bill Walton and said, Bill, can you play? Bill Walton said, I believe I still can play. Yes, I think I can still play. Red Auerbach thought about it for a moment and then took the cigar out. And as Bill Walton put it in his story, he goes, I swear to God, green smoke came out of the man's mouth, which, of course, you know, the Celtics are green and leprechauns and all that. And Red Auerbach said, he's good. Pass him. We got a game to play. And he ended up being the sixth man of the year and spelled Robert Parrish. Before he went to the Celtics, he called Robert Parrish. This is how much of a team player he was. And this is a guy that could easily have said, I am the cat's meow. I was the dominant player in college. I won an NBA Finals MVP, NBA MVP. I won a world championship with Portland. He called Robert Parrish before he even joined the Celtics and said, listen, man, there's a chance I'm going to join the Celtics, but I want you to know that I am not trying to take your spot. I will be your backup. Are you okay with that? And Robert Parrish said, absolutely. I've seen some really interesting things with Bill Walton, working, just seeing kids on the playground playing basketball. They don't even know they're talking to a Hall of Famer. Dave Pasch said, listen, he was always, he loved the spar back and forth, but it was never personal. And so he was a great player, college, pro, high school. But then he became a broadcaster, and he was just a unicorn. Whether you loved him, liked his style, didn't like it, got tired of it, whatever it was, he won a Sports Emmy in 2001. And he was the guy that you saw on those late games, college basketball on the West Coast for Pac-12 games. And as people said, it's probably almost fitting that Bill Walton passed away right after the Pac-12 passed away. And that's an interesting point. But Bill Walton was a unicorn, an absolute unicorn. And some of the sayings he said, and he got to be in with the Grateful Dead. He was a hippie there, well, probably his whole life, I guess. and I, you know, the one time I saw this one clip, he's doing, he's helping out with Jason Benetti, who he worked with on TV, and Benetti's doing a White Sox game or a Tigers game, whatever it was. And it said something about what was the key to his career. And Bill Walton said, he goes, I never got too low. I only got high. I mean, things like that just make you laugh. And I will tell you this, ladies and gentlemen, to give you an idea of how cool Bill Walton was. And I wish I would have met the man. I really, truly did.
Yeah.
Because everybody says that he just didn't forget things. Like, he actually cared and asked about you. A lot of these people that are broadcasters, and there's certain ones in this, well, I won't go too far, but they might be 5'9", but their ego is 8'10". And they just care. They all about themselves. They might put on a persona they care, but truly, the first thing they want to talk about is themselves. Bill Walton was not that way. And it is interesting to hear all these amazing stories about Bill Walton and things he's done for people, but what all the people that work with Bill Walton said was he always would listen to you. He wanted to know about you. He wasn't bragging about his accolades, and he had every right to do it, as most people would. He didn't run on the social media and brag about everything that happened in his life. He simply lived his life, and he was very content. And it sounds like he was an amazing person who almost always had a smile on his face, never took himself too seriously, which I think is something, and I'll admit, I wish I could learn it, because I think we all in society need to learn something from Bill Walton, and that is, don't take yourself so seriously, and maybe don't take everything so seriously. We know some of us are very, very serious, and we don't enjoy life. Bill Walton enjoyed life. The Rick Carlisle story, the head coach of the Pacers, is pretty amazing. He had a gal he was dating, and he called Bill Walton. Rick Carlisle was a member of the Boston Celtics. And Bill Walton, of course, was a member of the Celtics back when they won a title in 86, considering one of the greatest teams ever played. Okay. He had Bird, McHale, Parrish, Ainge, Dennis Johnson. Bill Walton was off the bench, for crying out loud, a Hall of Famer. And they won a title in 86. 1987, Walton, that was his final year with the Celtics. Of course, he had injuries again, kind of derailed the end of his career as well. And Rick Carlisle was a teammate of his, and so Rick Carlisle wanted to go to a Grateful Dead concert, but he didn't have tickets. And he was kind of like on a date with this gal, and he called up Bill Walton because he knew Bill Walton was knew the Grateful Dead. Said, "Hey, Bill, I don't have any tickets or anything, but I've got this date and so forth. I'd like to go Grateful Dead concert. Do you have any idea, you know, how I could get tickets, or can you help me?" And Bill Walton said, "Say no more. It will be taken care of. Don't worry about it. Go to the back door by the loading dock, blah, blah, blah." So Rick Carlisle tells the story. He leaves his date in the car so he can go up and make sure that, you know, legitimately he's going to get tickets. He got all access passes to the Grateful Dead. He was on stage as fans watching, okay? And they got to then sit down with Jerry Garcia and the members of the Grateful Dead for 15 minutes just talking.
Mm-hmm.
And Rick Carlisle ended up marrying that woman. I'm guessing that helped him score some points early on.
Yeah.
So Rick Carlisle says, "Bill Walton helped me find my wife. Like, basically, he helped me get hitched, and they've been married ever since." That's an amazing story. Mm-hmm. Like, but Rick Carlisle called Bill Walton, like, "Hey, man," and he's like, "Don't, no worries, I got you." And he took care of it. And that's not some Bill Walton went around bragging to people they took care of people. He didn't go around bragging about this and that. And he didn't tell people he was sick with cancer, even when he was broadcasting games. Now, maybe people do that because they don't want people to feel sorry for them. Maybe they're a little bit more private than we think. Or maybe he's just like, everybody's got enough things to worry about in the world today. Why do I need to pile on and go, "Oh, Bill Walton has cancer"? But it stunned me when he passed away, because I had no idea.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, some of these other people, and Dick Vitale is just an example. Once again, I'm not trying to say he's a horrible guy for doing it, because the fact that he draws attention to his battle against cancer helps other people fight. And it also raises a lot of money. It's just different ways of doing things. But I've always been more about gravitating towards people that are genuine, people that are comfortable in their own skin, that are willing. I've been a little bit more, I levitate a little bit more towards people that are, I feel more upfront and honest, even if it hurts a little bit. That's just me. Now, some people out there need to feel like they need to be validated all the time. They need everybody to love them and like them. They need to brag about everything their family does, their grandparents do, their kids do, their school does. And that's fine. That's your thing. I'm not saying you shouldn't do it. I think there could be a little moderation every once in a while, but hey, that's just me. But that is what I think it would be really cool if more people like Bill Walton, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
There's I'm thinking of two different things in my head when you're talking about this. The one thing I'm thinking of is the farewell tour guys, right? Like when they're retiring. So Kobe has the farewell tour, and everybody knew he was retiring, right?
Derek Jeter.
And I think Derek Jeter, and to an extent, I was actually part of one of these with Michael Jordan, because I went and watched him play in Denver his last game there, and they had a big thing. They knew that 2003 was going to be his last year playing too. So, you know, everywhere he went, Denver gave him a free Harley Davidson. Like, I'm like, Michael Jordan can't pay for a Harley. Like,
right.
But it's the similar thing there. But then you look at my favorite team right now. Tim Duncan didn't do a farewell tour. He didn't want to do that.
Nope.
Monta Ginobili didn't do a farewell tour, anything like that. And so it's like they just, okay, I'm done. After the year was over, you kind of knew it was probably coming. But they didn't do the whole thing like, hey, before the season starts, hey, I'm leaving. And that's a personality thing,
yes,
right?
It is.
Like it's something that was built into Tim Duncan. It's something that was built into Kobe Bryant to kind of be the face and flash and things are about him, right?
Right.
And he made things about him. And I'm with you the same way with Dick Vitale and Bill Walton. I'm like, I'm not saying Kobe's a bad person for making things about him. I'm not saying Michael Jordan's a bad person for making things about him. They just went about it a different way.
Yeah.
And there's two others that really come to my mind of similar situations with Bill Walton. When Chadwick Boseman died,
yes,
the actor, nobody had a clue that he was what battles he was going through for like 2 years.
Passed away at the age of 44, I believe.
Because, I mean, everybody thought he was thought there was something like he was a drug addict or something, because he was so skinny in one of the movies that he did. They didn't know that cancer was rotting his body, and that's why he was so skinny
and
in that
still
movie
working.
That he did. And he was working. So Chadwick Boseman's one. But in this profession, the other one that I think of all the time and things like this is Paul Splittorff. This guy just was all of a sudden gone from Royals TV broadcasts.
Yeah.
And I was like, where's Paul? And finally, I mean, there's a point where you have to address it, right?
Sure.
Whether it's when you pass away, like Bill Walton or Chadwick Boseman, or when it's gone on so long. That Paul's been gone too long from this broadcast. What's going? This happened during baseball season too. I think with the Bill Walton thing, it helps that basketball was over. Yeah. He's not on the air. This happened during baseball season with Paul, and so we're like, where's Paul at? Why is he not here? So eventually, you know, a couple months down the road, they got to be like, Paul's got cancer, and his was throat, I think, and then we knew that, and then he came back for a little bit, and then he left again for good, right? And then he passed away, unfortunately. But those are kind of the things that I think about. You know, personally, when I went through what I went through almost 10 years ago now, like I was quiet about all that, like the whole until I had to be like, okay, this is why I've been gone from work for 2 months,
right,
or a month, whenever I made that decision to kind of open up about it. But there's so many people out there that are the Bill Waltons, the Chadwick Bosemans, the Paul Splittorfs, that just, this is something I'm dealing with internally and personally, and I don't need to tell everybody about it because I'm not looking for your sympathy or what it might be. Right. I'm not looking for this or that. I just need to battle this by myself right now. And eventually you're going to find out one way or the other. Unfortunately, with Bill Walton, we found out after he's gone from us. But it's just, you know, people are going to do that different. Dickie V is one that it was out. It was public right away. You know, there are plenty of people that it was out. It was public right away. You know, and we knew about it, and we watched their battle. Craig Sager, right? It was out. It was public. We watched his battle. And so it's just people do things different. Mm-hmm. And that one way is not better than the other, I don't think. One way is not – you're not a worse person one way or the other. It's just we're all human, and none of us are the same. None of us are going to approach this exactly the same way that somebody else did. Because it's our decision. It's our choice. It's our battle that we have to deal with.
Yeah. And – you know, Greg Sharp's a great example here recently because you could tell he reluctantly told people.
Absolutely.
Because he said exactly what you were just talking about with Split, that eventually people were like, he's been off the air for a while. What's going on? And people start asking questions. And in order to squash any rumors, it helps to address it. And Greg Sharp basically said that when he announced that he's battling cancer, because you could tell he didn't want to tell anybody. In fact, I think he even said,
Bill Snyder's another example. Yeah. He definitely didn't want to tell anybody, but it's you're not a profile where you have to do it.
But when you disappear off a broadcast or this or that or whatever else, you either got to fill people in or they're going to jump to conclusions, I guess, is the way to do it. You're right. By having college basketball over, you know, if Bill was dealing with this, like, and he was dealing with during the season, but he was good enough to do broadcasts.
To make it through the year. If it would have taken him off the broadcast, then the questions would have come.
Which I think he didn't do some there at the end of the Pac-12 season, the very end, but you didn't notice it much because it was almost over.
Yeah.
So, you know, Bill Walton may rest in peace and may more people be like Bill Walton. Don't have to be him. But be like him. I just think he's a very unique individual, and I say that with all love and respect. And he was a hell of a player, too. A lot of people don't even know that. Young people don't know that. One of the greatest centers to ever play the game at every level.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody wants to talk about, you know, Shaq likes to talk about how he was the greatest, most dominant. Bill Walton never said that about himself. It's kind of reason why I like Bill more than Shaq. Another reason. From that standpoint. And I'm not saying I don't like Shaquille O'Neal. He's done a lot of great things off the court and done good things for people too. He's not exactly humble. But some people are bragging. They like to brag and they're not humble. And then some people are humble. And some people don't know what humility is. I'll leave it at that. Hockey playoffs.
Robertson leaps at Lindell's shot. Off the ski to try settle. It's Robertson in tight. Scores! Hat trick goal for Jason Robertson, and Dallas has regained the lead.
That goal with just over 8 minutes left gave the Stars a 4-3 lead. They go on to win game 3 of the Western Conference Finals, 5-3 over the Oilers. They're up 2-1, not best of 7. Tonight's Stanley Cup playoffs, it is the Eastern Conference Finals. Game 4 tonight, 7 o'clock on ESPN. Rangers are up 2-1 on the Florida Panthers. ESPN's graphics said Carolina Panthers. Good to know ESPN knows what sport they're covering. Not. Rafael Nadal has been eliminated from the 2024 French Open in the first round of the Grand Slam tournament. Nadal, who is a 14-time French Open champion, lost to a number 4 seed in straight sets. In a match that lasted just over 3 hours, Zverev was victorious over Nadal. That could be his final appearance at Roland Garros. I want to let this sink in for a second. this is the thing that I want to get across, and it ties back to Bill Walton a little bit. And it ties back to what Dusty said earlier about the Boston Celtics and people trying to pee on everybody's parade. Could we just stop for a moment and enjoy these amazing people and athletes while we have them? Is that too much to ask? Instead of saying LeBron is the GOAT or isn't the GOAT, can we just actually soak in how great he is while he still plays? Because pretty soon he won't be playing anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, instead of, as you said earlier, you know, degrading the Celtics and what they're doing, could we just sit back and appreciate that they're 12-2 and they've won games and made the plays to win games that winning teams, championship teams do, and the other team just quite isn't ready? Can we appreciate Bill Walton and all the amazing things he did on and off the court and behind the microphone instead of, you know, coming up with something to make fun of him, or if you didn't like him, do something, which I really haven't seen anybody do that. Rafael Nadal. Let's not talk about who the greatest tennis player of all time is, whether it's Novak, Roger Federer, Nadal. I don't care. Let's focus on something that you will never, ever see, ever, 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 I guarantee it, in the rest of your life in sports. You will never see this ever again. And if you think I'm wrong, correct me, Dusty. Rafael Nadal, there are two numbers that you need to soak in as a sports fan. Even if you're not a tennis fan, you need to soak this in. Rafael Nadal won the French Open 14 times. No. He didn't compete in it 14 times. He won the whole damn thing 14 times. That's a decade and a half.
Mm-hmm.
That means he played older, experienced players when he first started, players in their prime when he was in his prime, and on his backside of his prime, he was still beating guys younger that were in their prime. A decade and a half. He won 14 French Open titles. Nobody is even close.
Out of 18, by the way, too.
Yes. He never lost in the first round of the French Open his entire life until yesterday. And he's a shell of himself right now. And he had to play the number 4 seed in the world.
Yeah, Zverev's been, I mean, he's been up in the top 10 right. for years now.
Bad draw for Nadal, but he hadn't played, so that's how they seed it, whatever. But here's but you think 14 French Open titles impressive. That's not even the best number I got for you to end the show today. You want to appreciate greatness? Rafael Nadal played in the French Open, you said 18 times, is that correct?
It might have been 17. Did they have a tournament the COVID year? I can't even remember now. I don't think they did, so that might have been 14 out of the 17 years. I don't know what he did prior to that and after that, like how many tournaments he actually played in.
Let's see, it's 14 titles. He won the French Open title in 05, 06, 07, 08. That's four in a row.
Yeah.
10, 11, 12, 13, 14, another five in a row. 17, 18, 19, 20, four in a row. They must not have had it in 21. 22, just a couple years ago, he won it. Let's see. How many tournaments did he play here? He played, that has all the wins, but let's see here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17. Okay, they did play in 2021.
Yeah, they did.
18, he withdrew. So he played in 19. Rafael Nadal in 19 French Open tournaments. 19. Won it 14 times. 74% of the time he was in the French Open, he didn't just make it to the semis. He won the whole thing. That percentage still isn't as good as the SEC getting 11 to 14 teams in a baseball tournament, and they don't deserve that many, but whatever. But here's the number that's going to really blow your mind, because it blows my mind every time I think about this. And you can, and this is what the naysayers and the doubters will do. They'll pee on your parade. This is what the poo-pooers will do. I just coming up with a new term, and I'm going to copyright it. The poo-pooers. This is what the poo-pooers are going to do after I would say this. This is what happened on the Talking Heads show, because they got to pee on everything. Yeah, but he might have been the greatest tennis player on clay. That was his surface. Okay, fine. But can you just let me have this moment? 14 French Open titles. The greatest players in the world over two decades barely could beat him. You know how I know they barely beat him? You know how many times he lost in the French Open in his 19 years? You know how many, what his overall record was? 112 wins at the French Open and four losses.
Yeah, I mean.
Four! 112 and four.
Yeah.
Let me do the math for all you mathematicians out there. He won 97% of professional tennis matches at a major called the French Open against guys that were more experienced in their prime when he was young, against guys who were in their prime and he was in his prime, and he did it in his 30s, he did it in his teens, he did it in his 20s. He lost four freaking times his whole career, counting yesterday, four times in his whole career at the French Open. Four. And this is during the era of arguably the three best players ever played.
Mm-hmm.
Federer, Djokovic, and Nadal. Nadal didn't just beat up a whole bunch of people that were no good. He didn't play in an era where there was nobody that was his contemporary. He did it during Federer, Djokovic, and his tenure. And many people believe those are the three greatest tennis players that ever lived on the face of the earth in men's tennis. And he went 112-4 during that span. Ladies and gentlemen, I don't care that was all on clay. He dominated clay. I mean, you would think somehow, some way, he would have got knocked out in the first, second, or third round a few times. Nope. Nope. Until yesterday when he's, you know, just coming back from injury and trying to get healthy against the number four guy in the world he lost. If he had a better draw, he wouldn't have lost yesterday. There's not many more impressive stats than that. 100. Yeah. That's like a softball pitcher's record. In high school, 112-4. Well, you know, they play some weaker competition. Mm-hmm. They played some 1As, 2As. They played some bad. They're in a bad league. Or, oh, well, this team went 112-4, and this coach is 4 years at Central Plains. Well, yeah, okay. They had Emily Ryan. They had this gal. They had these girls. They were amazing. They're awesome. That's pretty amazing as well. No. He did this over the span of two decades. Lost four times. You talk about people remembering their losses? It don't take him long to count his.
This yesterday would be the first one he remembers. If you ask him, what are your losses at the French Open? I lost first round in Zverev in 2024. I mean, it is. You do the math, and it's there's been 19 tournaments, and he had to withdraw from one, and he won 14. That means he's only lost four times in this tournament. And so... It's insane. And obviously, for all these people, your wins are, you know, the three that you mentioned, your wins are going to be way greater than your losses at all these majors because you're dominant and you're winning. And so, yeah, I mean, if you're going to have the day where this is actually a conversation about who the greatest tennis player of all time is, you will bring this up, right, that he dominated clay. But that also should be a point that is lifted up and respected to the biggest degree ever, because not only did he dominate clay, I think people, you know, teams dominate, players dominate in things like this, but they're not winning 96% of the time while they're dominating.
No.
They're, you know, the Bulls were 72-10. That wasn't 96% winning percentage, right? And so you just look at all this stuff and it's stupid, insane. You can just brush it off and say, oh, he dominated clay. You got to understand the domination on clay, too, of actually what that meant for him to be called the king of clay. And it's like when you're as good as he is, then now you have this psychological advantage over everybody that you're playing on that surface, too, and everybody that you're playing at this tournament. I mean, you brought up Central Plains. Something I can actually compare this to that people around here would know is when Brittany Dietz was playing in high school tennis at Osborne. She was 149-0 in her career. And I watched the way she warmed up for her tennis matches. The player that was on the opposing side of the net was beaten before the match even started because they saw what she did to prepare. They knew how good she was. And it was... half of that was psychological. It's like, not half of it probably, because I would say 10%, because she put in the 90% without question, because I saw it with my own eyes. And so it's, but when you look at that, understand, okay, you can say they dominated, but understand how much they dominated, mm-hmm. and how great they were at what they did, and how they could get in your mind just because of how dominant they were before you even stepped out on the court. It's just, it's so crazy to me to see that level of dominance.
And just to put an even more impressive nugget on top, or a bow on top of this situation, do you know what his record was against Roger Federer in the French Open during all these years?
It was a lot to a little. I know that, because that's one of the biggest points of contention against Roger Federer. It was his record against Nadal. So French, I don't know how many times they played, but I'll bet Roger beat him once.
Nope. 5-0. 5-0 against Federer. Never lost to Federer on clay.
I didn't
clay.
Know if he ever did
never.
Beat him on clay.
Never did. Never did. What do you think his record was against Joker at the French Open?
4-0.
7-2.
Yeah.
7-2. And won every final against Joker except for one.
Yeah.
Think about this for a second. He has four losses at the French Open. One was yesterday when he's done, basically, against a four seed. I really shouldn't even count that one. Two of his three losses prior to yesterday at French Open were against maybe the greatest player that's ever played, and he's 7-2 against that guy in the French Open, Novak Djokovic. The outlier is, and this is something that this guy can be proud of for the rest of his life, the outlier is, where did it go? I had it, darn it. I had it somewhere. Robin Soderling. You remember Robin Soderling?
I do, but vaguely.
He lost.
Not a whole lot of people do.
In 2009, he lost to Robin Soderling from Sweden in a fourth round.
Mm-hmm.
And all that did was spur Nadal into the next season, where he didn't lose a single set in the 2010 French Open and beat the crap out of Robin Soderling in the French Open final and got his redemption in straight sets. So Robin Soderling, Novak Djokovic, the only two men that ever beat Rafael Nadal at the French Open until yesterday.
Yeah,
Federer couldn't even beat him.
So the real
Federer's one of the greatest players of all time. He was 0-5.
Yeah.
Joker 2-7. I mean, he was 12-2 against the two other great players of all time at the French Open. The dominance is insane.
Oh yeah.
I mean, how do you poo-poo on that? Well, you didn't play the greatest competition because you know there was no other great person to push him. He had two.
Yeah.
And Joker's younger than him.
Any of these guys playing in the era by themselves would have
Andy Murray, I'd deal him 30, too.
31, 32 Grand Slams.
Yeah.
I mean, if they were just them by themselves. I mean, that's how dominant all three of these guys are. And, you know, you can say it all you want that he's the king of clay, but look at the record. He's
no
won
doubt.
On every surface.
Yes, he has.
He's won Grand Slams.
He's got the Grand Slam. So he's got all of them.
Yeah, he's won on every single surface. And, you know, a guy that we talked about for a long, long time that we thought was the greatest player,
Roger
never
Federer.
Won it at the French. I'm talking about back when we were watching in the 90s.
And one of the reasons Pete he didn't Sampras. Was because of Nadal, too.
Yeah.
One of the reasons that Federer didn't win the French. Did Federer win the French?
Federer. I was talking about Pete Sampras.
Oh, okay, Sampras.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. You cut in before
Sorry,
I
my bad.
Get Pete's name out
my
there.
Bad.
Yeah.
My bad. I thought you were going that route.
Yeah. Pete Sampras, who we thought up until this group of guys came in, was probably the best player ever. Never won the French Open.
Many people believe, and I agree with this, that Pete Sampras was a better tennis player than Andre Agassi. In his overall career accomplishments, he was the better player.
Yeah.
But Agassi has a career Grand Slam.
Yeah, exactly. And that was,
he was that able
was
to win
point
the
of contention. But you know, when they played against each other, Pete was winning
usually
a lot of those matches.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of what we talked about with this, and that's why nobody wanted to – not nobody. I did for a long time until – Djokovic came up, and I just don't think it's going to be much of an argument here if Joker gets healthy and stays healthy and keeps winning. But for this, what we're talking about right now, I mean, it's stupid insane.
By the way,
the dominance.
I shortchanged Rafael Nadal. My apologies. 8-2 against Joker in the French Open. 6-0 against Federer. 14-2 against the two greatest players in the world, not named Rafael Nadal. During these guys' prime. That's insane. And then throw in Andy Murray, who was pretty decent too. 2-0.
Yeah.
That's 16-2 against arguably the four best players during the last decade.
Yeah, and Andy's the guy that really is like on the outside looking
at that poor guy.
He is so good. Oh. He was so dominant for like about a 2-3 year stretch.
Man.
And just, I mean, injuries obviously derailed the back of what he did here. But, yeah. I mean, if he was playing in a different, if he was playing in the Pete era, right? Pete Sampras, Andre Agassi era, he'd have so many more grand slams.
He would.
It'd be crazy.
It's kind of like, Barkley and Ewing and Karl Malone and John Stockton. If Jordan wasn't in their way, how many titles would they have won? Olajuwon benefited when he retired for a couple of years. And like many people have talked about, you know, Mahomes is kind of the Jordan of the NFL now, Patrick Mahomes. You know, how many titles would the Niners have if Mahomes wasn't in the way? Probably two.
Yeah.
And, you know, and the Bengals might have one, and the Bills might have a couple. And that was something that Charvarius Ward said. I only saw this on a podcast the other day. Former Chiefs corner who plays for the Niners. He said that Mahomes is the Jordan of the National Football League. He said, there's no way you can tell me we're not the best team in football those 2 years, but we ran into the greatest quarterback. And so... so then what's going to happen? Down the line, the new talking heads, please don't let the same ones be on TV 15 years from now, are going to put down Joe Burrow. They're put down Josh Allen. You know, like some people knock Charles Barkley and knock this and knock that. And it's like, yeah, but, you know, pretty good excuse. You were stopped by the greatest of all time. You know, I mean, how do you... Sometimes there's just you hit the wrong time. Like you mentioned, Andy Murray hit the wrong time. Mm-hmm. Like if he just now was coming in his
Andy
prime,
Roddick hit the wrong
Andy
time.
Andy Roddick. Right? Oh, there's no doubt about that. And so when you kind of hit the time, sometimes there's a whole bunch of contemporaries. And, you know, and by the way, Shaq can say all he wants about having more rings than Barkley. And once again, Shaq came in at the right time. But Shaq, they beat the Bulls when Jordan had only played in like 20 games. Mm-hmm. And then what happened the very next year? The Bulls beat the crap out of him.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if Shaq had to deal with Jordan during his Laker years, would the Lakers have won a three-peat? Would he have his four rings? No, I don't think he would.
No.
But if Barkley would have played when Shaq did, would Barkley have at least a ring? I think he probably would. Sometimes it's the greats that stop you. Nadal stopped Federer from ever winning the French. And you have Mahomes stopping a lot of these great quarterbacks for not winning it. Ask Lamar Jackson, add him to the list. And look at what Jordan did to stop people from winning championships. It's made people say, well, they're a great player, but they didn't win a title. Yeah, but, you know, Jordan won 6 out of 8 years. And Mahomes has won already 3 in the span of 5 or 6 years. I mean, sometimes you have this wall that you just can't knock down. You can't knock the guy off his throne. And that was what happened at the French Open. You could not beat Rafael Nadal. The greatest players that ever lived, arguably the greatest player that ever lived considered today, is Novak Djokovic. He was 2-8 against him.
Yeah.
At the French Open.
Roger Federer sends a thank you card to Robin Soderling every year because 2009 was the only year he won the French Open. He didn't have to play Nadal.
Because Nadal ended up losing in 2009 to Robin Soderling. That's absolutely right. Yeah. Robin Soderling, there's a trivia answer for you at the water cooler today. Have a great one.
Punch your ticket to local sports talk with the Sports Ticket Podcast. Now available via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.